Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? BPAK in the house for another episode of the Muscle Expert Podcast with a very, very special guest, Mr. Kiefer himself. You guys know the legend from carb backloading. You know, I always advocate a very similar approach to carb backloading. So we got the man himself on the phone today to spell it out for us and tell us how it's done. Welcome, Kiefer.
Hey, thanks, Ben, for having me on. I love talking to you. We've talked a couple times, and I'm just really happy to be on the show. So thanks for finally getting me on here.
Yeah, we finally got her done, man. We've been chasing each other around for almost a year now. So, very grateful to have you on. And so, man, like I told the story on your podcast, I'm going to tell it briefly on mine, was the way I found you was – I was putting on a seminar and told people the way I eat, and someone in the back of the room goes, "Hey, that's carb backloading." What the hell is carb backloading? So I looked you up and found out there's a lot to offer, man. You're a very, very smart guy, and I'm extremely grateful to have you drop some knowledge on my fans and my listeners today. So can you tell everyone a little about maybe the backstory behind carb backloading and how it came to be? And I guess maybe first tell us what it is and then how it came to be.
Quite simply, you know, it's a way of regulating your carb intake, so it's pure advantage instead of any disadvantage at all. I myself, because of how I eat as a kid and everything, I thought I used to have to really control my carbohydrate intake to look a certain way and to gain muscle at the same time. And I found out that, you know, literally the basic principle that works in so many different ways is just eat your carbohydrates at night. And so that's basically what carb backloading is. It's really a framework on how to eat your carbs at night. And I know that sounds funny, but there can be a lot of nuances to it. So that's what it is. And it really came to be because of two competing struggles. The one struggle was I was a fat kid when I was younger, and as an adult, I found out I could put on muscle pretty easily. But if I put on a lot of muscle, I usually put on a lot of fat, and when I lost a lot of fat, I couldn't put on any muscle. And I had come up with another diet called Carb Night, which really is very, very ultra low carb all week, and you only eat carbs one night a week. And I'd gotten out of shape working an office job. It was horrible. And, you know, I got back into the gym and I was using Carb Night and I leaned out fantastic. My strength was great. I got shredded, looked fantastic. But for 3 months, I sat stagnant. I could not build any more muscle. I just was going nowhere. And I kept upping my calories, upping my fat, and I just wasn't going anywhere. And then, I read a piece of research about diabetics and being able to clear blood glucose with resistance training. I'm like, holy crap, you know, that could maybe be a tool I could use to introduce carbohydrates more often, get some extra benefits without getting fat. And I started using that and it worked amazingly well. Three or four guys in the gym, you know, I started making progress again. They're like, are you getting ready for a show or what's, I'm like, no, you know, and this is just what I'm doing eating wise. So they tried it. And it just really started to work. So I sat down and I started digging more and more and more and more into the research, basic human metabolism, you know, endocrinology. It turns out, you know, there's so many reasons you should be eating your carbohydrates at night. It's almost ridiculous. And I'd say half of those reasons are for health and the other half are for performance. So that's how it came to be pretty much.
Amazing, man. So like, I want to get into a little bit of the detail about, kind of breaking the misconception that you should eat carbs for breakfast. Cause everyone that, you know, kind of meanders around our industry says, well, the best time to eat carbs is for breakfast and because you're most insulin sensitive at that time. And can you maybe talk to you a little bit to that and maybe dispel that myth?
Yeah, that one's – I've always been on you know, of course, you know, my background's ultra low carb, so I've always not been a fan of carbs. But when I did eat them, when I thought I had to eat them to get bigger, I definitely front loaded the carbs. You know, I was eating like a lot of oatmeal, kept the fat low. And what I didn't realize is that I knew there were consequences with insulin that would cause, you know, fat accumulation or lack of fat mobilization for the rest of the day once I did that. And I just thought that was a trade-off I had to make. But it also turns out there's other really bad effects. You've got, when you first get up, you actually have, it's, assuming you're a healthy individual, you've got some of the highest cortisol levels of the day is when you first wake up. And that's actually really advantageous and beneficial if you don't introduce elevated insulin levels. Because cortisol is amazingly great at mobilizing body fat, helping to mobilize intramuscular glycogen stores, intramuscular fatty acid stores. It really does allow your body to burn fat very, very effectively and to mobilize body fat. So, you know, that cortisol spike in the morning is almost literally magical. It can even instigate tissue repair, connective tissue repair, if we don't interrupt it with insulin. So that's kind of the first thing, the first clue that we probably shouldn't eat carbohydrates in the morning, regardless of our insulin sensitivity. But the second big one there that people miss is, yes, you're more insulin sensitive, but your whole body, all the tissues that respond to insulin are all more insulin sensitive in the morning. And the two major tissues for glucose disposal are muscle and body fat. And those are the two things that are extremely insulin sensitive in the morning. It's both of them. So if you're eating a lot of carbohydrates, your muscles only have a very limited capacity to store those carbs as glycogen. Your fat cells actually have an unlimited capacity. So if you have too many carbohydrates in that first part of the day, they're going to preferentially be disposed in your body fat stores instead of your muscle or your liver. So those are two of the, you know, biggest reasons why you really should not be eating carbs in the morning.
Yeah, amazing. That's literally something.
Did that
I've
answer
been...
the question?
Yeah, totally, man. I've been struggling with that since, obviously, as an aspiring bodybuilder from the time I was essentially 18. You know, everyone says, well, you got to eat carbs for breakfast. And I would go to the gym and I'd be sleepy and, you know, I would be getting fat and I would even be eating less calories than I believe I needed to eat, like below my BMR, and I would still be accumulating fat. And, you know, one day someone suggested to me, well, why don't you just not do this? And I go, well, I don't understand. Why wouldn't I eat carbs when I'm most insulin sensitive? And I want, well, everyone also says you want to block your cortisol, right? Like this is, you know, 10, 12 years ago, people were like, well, then you want to blunt your cortisol because cortisol is a bad thing. Everybody believes cortisol is a bad thing. So, you know, educating people on the fact that, no, cortisol is not a bad thing. It's too much cortisol all the time is a bad thing. But your natural cyclical circadian rhythms are great for you. Like it's the way it's supposed to be. So when I finally kind of discovered that is when I kind of started discovering carb backloading.
Yeah, it's on the just – cortisol point real fast. It's even interesting when they track hormone changes associated with resistance training, especially in experienced athletes, the hormone whose spike correlates the greatest with benefits from the training is cortisol. It's not testosterone. It's not growth hormone. It's that cortisol spike that you get during training. So, you know, cortisol is a really important hormone, you know, in all sorts of different ways, and that it's been villainized so much really sucks. And like you said, it's because people don't understand it's high cortisol all the time. That cortisol spike after you train also correlates with how low, the bigger that spike, the lower your average cortisol levels are through the day. So, you know, cortisol in my mind is like a magic hormone.
Yeah, totally agree, man. And, you know, that's one thing that I preach to everybody is almost, I used to the analogy of kind of bleeding your adrenals of cortisol when you're training. The idea that you're trying to get as much out as possible, if you want to, you know, get that massive spike around the workout. Something that I started doing for a little bit this summer was actually doing a cryo sauna post-workout, which is like a, it's like 180 degrees below zero cold sauna. And the idea that the suggestion there is by subjecting your tissues to such a short-term traumatic stress, it actually gets a huge spike in cortisol to initiate the recovery cascade. And I found a tremendous benefit as far as feeling amazing for a long period of time. My serum cortisol levels actually went down overall, and my recovery seemed to be increased. So I was doing that about 3 days a week because I didn't want to do it too much, but experimenting with a little bit. And it kind of goes hand in hand with what you're saying there, trying to get that maximum cortisol spike so that everything stays lower, or the cortisol stays lower for the rest of the day.
Yeah, it's there's so much misinformation and folklore that we still – it still passes for, cutting edge science. It's like, man, let's just update stuff. That's what I loved. The first time we talked, I'm like, holy crap. Like, here's a guy who not only has all the experience, but like he keeps up with this stuff. Like, he understands that things change and that we need to change our prescriptions, which, just honestly in the professional bodybuilding world and even professional powerlifting world, there's not a lot of guys like that. It's just kind of like, well, this is what's been done for the last 30 years. This is what we're doing.
It's ironic that, I heard one of the IFBB coaches, and I won't say his name, say to one of his athletes, because the athlete goes, hey, because the coach said, hey, you should eat cheesecake on Friday before the contest. And so the athlete says, well, why cheesecake? And his literal response was, because Flex Wheeler ate cheesecake, you should eat cheesecake. And I was like, what the F does that mean? And that's not an exaggeration, man. So, well, Flex Wheeler used to eat cheesecake before the show, so should you. I'm like, that's just exactly what you're saying. And everybody's so stuck in the 90s. And, well, that worked for this guy, so should you. And, there's no logic. There's no science. There's no reason other than, well, Flex Wheeler looked awesome. So if you want to look like Flex Wheeler, you should trade in cheesecake, too. So that's a little analogy, right? I might as well start eating cheesecake every day.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to play off your joke, but it's probably better to give your audience information instead.
Can you just get into a little bit of detail about I think everyone wants to know, okay, you're the master, you're the creator of it. What exact protocol do you follow? Is there a particular time of the day that you think is optimal to train? I know you kind of go into this stuff a little bit in your program, obviously, but what do you do exactly? So if you're, all things equal, the same every day, Kiefer can do the same workouts every day, the same time of the day, and eat exactly the ideal circumstance, what does that look like? Approximately, obviously, it's going to take too much time to give exact details, but what time do you train? What types of carbs do you eat after workout, or when's the first time to eat carbs for the day?
So in an ideal world, and pretty much the way my world is structured now, the easy part is like training. If I'm going to train, it's got to be first thing in the morning, which is not, I don't think it's ideal, but it's ideal for my schedule right now, because if I don't do it when I first get up, I'm not going to make it into the gym later in the day. So much stuff's going on, and I'm totally exhausted by the end of the day, so I got to get it out of the way, which – in an ideal world, I'd be in the gym at 3 p.m. every day. But unfortunately, it's more like 5:30 a.m. And then, the way I eat carbs, particularly now, I'm not looking to get size or anything. So that's a hard question. The way I eat them is I just stick to my basic framework. I never eat carbs before, 5, 6 o'clock. I'm very fat heavy in that first half of the day, so I have a lot of coffee with whipping cream, vegetables with a lot of butter. I try to find creative ways to get fat in my diet. However that is, I love brisket, moist brisket's got a lot of fat. So, I go down to Whole Foods. That's what I get. Breakfast is usually some sausages. So pretty high fat content. Definitely get the protein in there too. And then dinner, I just kind of gauge it on how the workout went and how I'm feeling. I would say probably only 3 nights a week right now do I eat carbohydrates in the evening. And I completely gauge that off of subjective feel because I've been doing the diet for so long. And it doesn't necessarily matter if I worked out that day or not. And then I make sure one of those 3 days is a day I don't care. Like, I completely go crazy. There's this place down the street, Colonial Donuts, one night a week. I'm there at midnight because they bring out, like, the fresh donuts straight out of the hopper. They're amazing. So, you know, one night a week, I just don't worry about it. Like, whatever it was I wanted, that's what I'm going to get. The other two nights or sometimes three nights, it's just more like, you know, meat and potatoes, basically. Nothing,
yeah.
Nothing very exciting. And then if the desserts on the menu look good, then I'll get a dessert.
Now, someone looking to, let's put it, me as the example, I'm 6 months from the Arnold, 5 months from the Arnold. I want to build as much muscle mass as possible and optimize my body composition. Is there an ideal circumstance as far as time to train? Is it reasonable for me to train twice a day while doing this type of training? And when or, you know, if at all, would you start eating carbs on a day-to-day basis?
For you, maximum muscle mass, we might have to get a little more advanced. Saving your carbs at night. I assume, how many days a week are you training?
Let's say 5 or 6.
Okay. 5 or 6. So you're pretty much going to be eating carbs every night. That carbohydrate load is hard to judge, you know, based on most people. You've got a lot of muscle mass, and it really depends on the amount of carbohydrates you can eat every night is dependent on how much muscle mass you have and your training load. So you've got a pretty significant training load. I mean, you're going to be looking at, I would guess, somewhere between 400 and 800 grams of carbs a night or in the day, like however we get them. That's kind of going to be my guess. It could be lower than that. Again, without working with you, I can't tell you the exact prescription,
sure.
You know, but I would probably start at the 400 mark, see what happens over a couple weeks. You usually see significant differences quickly, which is nice, and then either ratchet that up or down from there. And then if that's too many carbs in the evening, there's a principle actually called glycemic backloading, which I don't like to use very often, but sometimes guys have a lot of muscle. There's a lot of refueling that needs to be done. You can actually introduce carbohydrates around noon or a little bit after, but very, very low glycemic index. I found, especially with guys carrying a ton of extra mass, so we're talking 250 plus, 260 plus, you know, we start getting up into those realms. The glycemic backloading is an incredible adjunct to still recomposition and lose body fat while increasing strength and muscle mass, you know.
So what would be considered a really low glycemic carb?
It's actually pretty simple. Something like you can pretty much take anything, and what I recommend is like rice, some kind of rice, wild rice, even white rice is fine, and mix a lot of fat with it. So white rice with butter is a really, really simple one for a lot of people because there's no allergy issues. Everybody can usually consume that. I think it tastes amazing.
Yeah.
And then, rice with ghee is so good. And then another one for people who don't have allergies, I mean, literally like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. A lot of peanut butter, not a ton of jelly. That will actually have a nice lower glycemic response that's actually the one most people go for. It's like they end up having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich around 1 o'clock or something like that if they need it.
And that's just if you're not able to get enough carbs.
Say that again?
That's just if you're unable to get enough carbs late in the day, like if you're not able to get your 400 to 800 grams in the evening, you'll just do a little bit of glycemic backloading.
Correct. And again, some people can do that. So I said, you know, you've kind of – that's why the book is a framework, because you got to figure out what works for you. Like me, I can just eat a ton of shit in the evening, pardon the language, and, you know, it works fine. So I can get in all the carbs I need. But some other people are just way more sensitive in that realm, and when they try to do that, they don't get as good of results. So we have to kind of ratchet things around. And part of that, I think, you know, for the average guy, let's just say they can get in there 400 grams or, you know, more or less, that insulin spike that they get with those carbs is incredibly important. Just like you were saying with the cortisol, you know, the cryotherapy to get that down and recover, you know, having a big insulin spike, and it turns out, you know, the most benefit for that insulin spike is about an hour or a little more after training. You don't want it right away. So getting people to get that insulin spike at the right time, I found, is very, very indicative of the results they'll get and how they can eat those carbs. So I might be confusing everybody more than I should be, but
No, not at all. Why do you say an hour after? Why do you say an hour after as opposed to immediately after?
Well, so, you know, when we look at the processes triggered by resistance training, you know, resistance training is inherently catabolic, triggers a lot of processes that are not advantageous initially for muscle growth. We get some proteolysis and things like that, but we're also actually triggering a ton of beneficial effects that allow us to get bigger down the road. So we actually are suppressing a lot of the anti-growth genes like myostatin. We increase activation of a lot of the growth genes like myogenin, and actually glycogenin increases in activation. So we get a lot of priming effects for increase, but we actually want to allow those catabolic effects to, quote unquote, set in for a while. They actually make the cells healthier, and they actually prime the cells for greater uptake of nutrients when we do introduce those. So that kind of hour post-workout, I would say the only time an athlete should be consuming nutrients in that window is if they're very, very highly focused on intramuscular glycogen recompensation, because right. In that instance, you've got a biphasic window of glycogen replenishment, and that first 30 minutes is not insulin mediated at all. That's the GLUT4 and GLUT12 pathway that, you know, you and I have talked about. I've talked about it with all my material. And then an hour after that, it's all insulin mediated. So again, this is where, you know, we talk about there's a lot of nuances there. For most people who are looking for hypertrophy and staying lean, it's keeping that hour window after workout actually could be beneficial to not introduce any nutrition in that window.
So not even aminos, nothing like that, no whey protein, just no nutrients at all.
That's correct. Actually, there's
interesting.
The research is pointing in the direction that you'll actually get better benefit from those things if you can hold them off until after that slight catabolic window actually forces. So it's interesting. Is those catabolic processes are, we talked about this, they're hormetic. So they need to be activated for a certain period of time. And that small period of time actually is hugely beneficial down the road. So we got to let that hormetic effect sit in. And sometimes we clip it off too soon. And we don't get the full hormetic effect that then even pushes the certain genes in the right direction even more. So, you know, if we want maximum growth signaling in our, you know, gene expression, if we want maximum decrease in all the genes that limit us, we actually want to let that hormetic effect sit in for a while. And, you know, that hour window, you know, or so seems to be kind of that optimal window for that. So, again, that's why carb backloading is so powerful, because, you know, you have your workout. Most of the time, without even realizing it, people, like, go home. That, you know, they're done at the gym, they go home, and then they start having their first meal or shake, and they've usually made it past that 30, 45-minute window.
It's so interesting, man.
That's an advantage.
So no intra-workout nutrition either, no aminos, no carbohydrate, obviously, during the workout either, then, with carb backloading.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Oh, the only thing – so, again, this is – one of those depends, you know, with strongman competitors, when they are in their training scenarios, I mean, you're talking about guys with 4-hour workouts.
Right.
So in those scenarios, there are an introduction. Yeah, there's an introduction of carbs about 30 minutes to an hour into their training.
Right.
But, you know, it's almost a necessity at that point. But most people, it's just like get a fat load before you work out. And if it's going to be if you have protein with it, don't do any fast absorbing protein. So, you know, like meat, eggs, those kind of things. And then have your workout allows you to mobilize a ton of body fat. It actually allows you to tap into intramuscular glycogen stores more effectively because insulin will interfere with the adrenal hormones, and the adrenal hormones are necessary for intramuscular glycogen to be accessed. So if you ever have those aminos or you have those carbohydrates, before you train and you raise insulin levels, we've actually automatically cut off the muscle supply to its closest energy source, which is not only the intramuscular glycogen, but also the intramuscular triglycerides and even some lipid pools that are stored around mitochondria in the cell. If you raise insulin levels, they won't even tap into those. So, you know, there's actually a ton and ton. There's tons of advantages to not doing anything that's going to increase your insulin levels before training.
And that's interesting. Like, anecdotally, I've been telling people to do that for a couple of years now. So people say, well, I train first thing in the morning, what should you eat? And then my response is always beef and coconut oil. I go, well, don't I need like a fast-acting energy source? Or I'm like, well, that's what I do instinctively. And I guess it's because I get my best results when I'm training for a contest, and that's typically my breakfast. So I just keep doing it all year. You know, it just seems to work so well pre-contest. I have less inflammation. I have great workouts. I have great focus. Still get tremendous pumps. So I guess there's a lot more evidence to it. You know, you're obviously the guy everybody goes to for learning the science behind this stuff, man. So you just kind of give me all this information. I'm sitting here with my mouth open trying to take it all in. So that's amazing, man. Amazing, interesting stuff.
It's just funny when I talk to you about stuff, you're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, this is what I do. And I honestly I love talking to the people that have become such efficient self-scientists. Like, they've figured this shit out without ever, you know, digging as deep as I had to dig to figure it out. And I'm always kind of in awe of that thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I've experimented with pretty much everything on the planet when it comes to nutrition because, I mean, my genetics are shit, for lack of a better term. Like, everyone in my family is fat. Nobody's ever been in the gym. Everybody's an alcoholic. Everybody lives on Doritos. And that's not an exaggeration, man. So, you know, when it comes to optimizing body composition, I have to play around with stuff, man. Like, I'll tell you what, man. Until I was 30, 28, I was tired. Like, I wanted to take a nap going into the gym. I'm like, let's everything was just, seemed like it was always working against me. You know, I'd start dieting, I'd get fatter. I'd start doing a little bit of cardio, I'd get fatter. And I'm like, I'm obviously doing a lot of things wrong here, you know. So, I just experimented with everything. I read everything I could find and see what everyone else is doing. And a lot of my best learning came from people outside of the bodybuilding industry, just people training other athletes or other athletes themselves and realizing there has to be some type of correlation in performance in general. So a lot of that just came from, you know, osteitis and see how it works. And eventually, after 15 years of trial and error, you kind of start narrowing it down a little bit. And I don't think by any means am I anywhere there, but you know, it seems like a couple of things I'm doing all right. So, good start.
You're probably better off than most people. So.
Yeah, but it's just because I'm so meticulous and so anal about it, right? Like, I'm realized that when things don't come easily to you, you realize how hard you have to work and how meticulous you have to be with it. So, like, if it had come easily to me, I probably wouldn't be, you know, half the person I am today because it just wouldn't have bothered. So I've got a bunch of really easy, quick questions for you, and you can want easier, quick for me, but not for you. I've got 8 questions, and they're carb backloading oriented, obviously. And I think these are the questions that you may have answered some of these, but some of the questions that our listeners would most want to hear. And then we're going to talk a little bit about you personally, but let's knock these out. Can you really lose fat and gain muscle at the same time using carb backloading?
Yes, that one's easy.
And yeah, I mean, give me a little bit of experience. No, I know it's yes or no. It's really yes or no answer. But give me a little bit of experience, or you know, have you tell me about some transformations or some case studies, or give me a little bit to give these guys a little bit of a tease, because ultimately, man, you're a massive authority, and they want to know. Like, you know, everybody says, yeah, you can lose fat and gain muscle at the same time, but why is it so much more likely when using carb backloading as opposed to your typical carb front loading stuff?
You know, there's a couple reasons. For, as far as case studies, I mean, we've actually got people, and this is the one thing I love about social media. In general, I think social media is, you know, almost cancerous in some ways in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do love is people like get DEXA scans when they start these things, you know, and then they'll run it for 6 or 8 weeks or 12 weeks, and then they'll do another DEXA scan. So we've got great data. And if you just search Facebook or even Google, you'll find these people who did their DEXA scans before and after, and they lost body fat and they gained muscle. It wasn't just, you know, they had a lower percentage of body fat, you know, or something like that. They literally gained muscle tissue while losing body fat. And that's not surprising. You know, there's actually reasons we would expect that. And in all, you know, it starts getting a little advanced when we talk about, you know, thermodynamics and things like that. But the second law of thermodynamics kind of tells us that inside the system, we could have shifts of material from one type of another depending on how we use energy. So in some instances, and you hit on this earlier, you were eating fewer calories than you needed, but the way you were eating, you were probably actually losing a little bit of muscle mass or lean tissue, and your body was increasing the body fat. And that's one route that the body can take. But if you shift the hormones the correct way, you can actually make it do the opposite. You can make it add muscle mass while it go ahead and decrease body fat. There's absolutely nothing that prevents that other than how we normally eat.
Awesome. So then second to that, what is the best ratio that you suggest as far as macronutrient ratios for optimizing carb backloading? Or optimizing nutrition in general, is there a particular ratio? I know you're very fat heavy in the front of the day. Or do you do it meal by meal basis? I know when I suggest nutrition, it's usually on a meal by meal basis as opposed to, you know, daily macros. How exactly do you, you know, for the people listening, is there some standard that they can apply? Like, hey, I want to gain muscle, this should be my macros. I want to lose fat, this should be my macros, anything like that?
Yeah, I do actually kind of both a daily and somewhat meal by meal, although I kind of section the day off a little bit. For daily, I mean, your protein needs, if you want to get bigger, or if you want to be a high-performance athlete, period, whether it's to be bigger,
right,
faster, or stronger, whatever, like protein is the number one most important thing. And you should be at 1 gram per pound body weight up to 1.3. I mean, under that window, you're not getting enough protein. Over that window, in general, most people see no benefit whatsoever.
Right.
As far as increase in muscle mass or performance. So that's your protein window. And then the way I usually break that up for most people, to just make it rock solid and stupid simple at the initial implementation, is that first half of the day, really worry about your fat content. Eat like fatty meats, add butter to things, you know, use oils on salads, whatever it is, you know, eat, like I said, the fattier meats like fatty fish, for your first half of the day. And then when you do get into post-training or whatever, like load up on both, load up on the protein especially. So you've had some during the day, but really focus on your protein needs at night. It turns out the body, it almost doesn't matter the type of protein you ingest, your body will use that to accumulate muscle mass over the next 24 hours. So the timing aspect isn't as important as we once thought. But, you know, if you take it in mostly post-training, you do get excellent benefits. There seems to be no upper limit to the amount of protein we can ingest and actually utilize in that meal. So you don't have to worry about those 30 gram per meal rules. And then carbs, again, for most people, I'm going to start at the 2 gram per lean pound of body weight of the person. That's going to be kind of my guesswork of where to start. And then that's something you have to monitor to ratchet up and down. I don't do that based on percentage of macros or anything like that. And you'll find pretty quickly whether you need to ratchet that amount up or down.
Awesome. That's perfect, man. And now, is there too much fat? So obviously in a ketogenic type situation where early in the day you're trying to get into ketosis, is there such a thing in carb backloading as taking in too much protein early in the day because it may be too insulinogenic, or should they avoid supplements, or what's your thought on that?
Yeah, that's why I've gotten more to this approach of, you know, backloading the protein supplements, especially because the first half of the day, you know, one thing I've learned in the deeper and deeper research and working with people is this idea of a cyclic ketogenic diet probably doesn't exist. Even if you're only eating carbs one time per week, you're probably never getting very significant ketone production. It's pretty interesting. So that means, you know, when you put all the research in that context, what's absolutely important is keeping that insulin load as low as possible. So keeping that in mind, that's why I really try to get people to stick with whole foods and whole fatty foods that have protein in that first half of the day. And they shouldn't have to supplement a lot. Literally after your workout, if, you know, you hit that, you go home after your workout and you have 100 grams of protein in that post-workout shake with the other stuff, that's totally fine. And that's probably going to make up any deficit you have from eating real food, or 150 grams. I mean, my post-workout shakes, when I was really trying to put on the size and first did carb backloading, I would literally have about 120 grams of protein in that post-workout shake. I mean, it was thick and gnarly, but I got all my protein in, and it was working great for, you know, keeping me lean and keeping my progress moving forward. And so I could just focus on kind of whole foods more in the first half of the day. So, yeah, keep those products down in the first half of the day if you can, just because, you know, our goal isn't ketogenic necessarily, but it really is keeping insulin levels low.
Right. Cool. Are there any supplements that you suggest work really well with carb backloading?
Creatine, obviously, is number one on the list.
Yeah, creatine with everything.
Creatine, caffeine. You can use fenugreek creatively, and that's not for its testosterone.
For insulin.
Testosterone properties. And I feel like I'm trying to be careful answering this because I'm about to launch my own supplement line, so I don't want to just make people feel like, yeah, I'm trying to direct in that direction.
You should, man. Ultimately, I mean, if you're putting something out, it's because you believe in it, right? There's no reason why you shouldn't answering the question, honestly.
Yeah, creatine, you know, for sure. Caffeine, fenugreek can actually increase insulin excursions. Amazingly enough, when people do their post-workout shake, I recommend things sweetened with, like, sucralose. Even though it's artificial, it also increases insulin output. You know what else? Obviously, protein. Simple proteins are great. Complex proteins can do well. Casein. I really like supplementing with some sort of casein, even if that's cottage cheese, because it's got a very nice hypertrophic response over a long period of time. Those supplements go fantastic with carb backloading, you know, and a lot of the stimulants work really well too.
And tangent to that, you suggested caffeine. Does caffeine, in your opinion, have an effect on insulin management?
So caffeine is another one of those interesting ones where it caffeine itself, including coffee, does not cause a release of insulin. But if you introduce carbohydrates with the coffee, you get a larger output of insulin. So how you drink your coffee is kind of important. And in carb backloading, it's perfect. If you're having coffee or caffeine without any carbs, you're just getting all ergogenic effects. You're getting some performance increase, and it's amazing. They've even shown without carbs, if you take coffee first thing in the morning, you get the actual same performance that you would get just by working out at night when your body temperature is increased. So, people, I don't know if they know, if you train at night, you actually get a more positive training response than training in the morning. But you can get the same training response just by drinking caffeine before your workout in the morning. So,
positive training response as far as what?
So you've got that rate of perceived exertion, and it goes up or it goes down as the day goes on.
Yep.
So usually in the morning you're at your worst, like a lighter workload seems heavier. But if you take caffeine in the morning, you actually will be at the same rate of perceived exertion in that morning after caffeine as if you waited at night to train.
Interesting.
So there's huge benefits to it in general. And then, like I said, the insulin problem, if you're not eating carbohydrates, you don't have to worry about the insulin problem.
Interesting, man. That's great. So if I train in the morning, which I do, should I eat carbs after my workout or an hour after my workout, or should I wait till evening in general?
Okay, I'm going to answer this one very, very specifically. Okay, first, in general, no. In general, no. You should, have something like you said, eggs. My preference is eggs and coconut oil after that training session, whenever I get home and cook that up. I have found in very limited instances, and I don't know the explanation for this yet, but females preparing for figure competitions, I find that if they train first thing in the morning and they have something like, say, half a brown banana kind of thing, after their training, I can get better results in that scenario than I can with just pure carb backloading, but I've never seen that in working with men. Only women, and only I would say about 50% of women. So I don't want to mislead anybody and say, no, you should never do that, because there are really isolated situations. But if you're a male, like I said, I've never found a scenario where that works as well as just purely carb backloading.
Great information, man. People need
all these
that
caveats, you probably...
That's ultimately what it is, right? No, that's how I teach people too. I'm like, my answer is always, it depends. I've never answered a question without starting it depends. People get pissed off, but that's the truth. Yeah. It's like so many different variables, so many different potential scenarios. Like, I don't know. I'm going to give you the general logic as to how you can make your own decision. That's all I can do. It's obviously impossible to answer everyone's question specifically.
Yeah, that's like why we talked about like putting the framework out there is so much more important than the minutia, because everybody's got to figure out their own minutia. It is really what it comes down to.
Unfortunately, I had this discussion with Lane Norton last week, the idea that most people just don't have the ability to apply logic. So you have to kind of take a lot of people and hold them by the hand for as long as possible and give them as much information as possible. The way he teaches people, he's under the impression that everyone is logical and intelligent. I mean, not that they're not intelligent, but I think human beings are inherently lazy. So even if you're teaching them intelligent principles, they're always going to choose the easy way out, I believe. Only do you have to consider the fact that, we need to teach them, but we need to teach them, basically very, very simple rules they can apply now, and then you have to give them the framework. Like you say, you can't just say, well, yes, you could eat a Pop-Tart if that fits into your daily nutrients somewhere. Yeah, you could, but I think you need to give them a little more framework, which I know carb backloading does, and you're really specific with a lot of stuff.
Can I be clear for your audience about if it fits your macros?
Yeah, definitely, man. That was the next question.
I hate that. I hate if it fits your macros. That's something young people specifically, or, when you first do it, kind of get away with. If all you focus on, like I will admit, focusing on how you regulate carbohydrates and then the other two in a subsequent way will have monumental results, and that's just carbs in general. But if you start to kind of muddy the idea of, well, I can eat carbs all day long, every day, and it doesn't matter the type of carbs as long as it fits in my macros, which you know, I don't even know what magical formula that anybody comes up with for that, you are not going to have great effects. And, you know, for some people it will work. It's interesting. They've done studies on, you know, the type of weight loss that can be achieved with different macronutrient ratios in the diet. And it's really funny because it turns out that if you are a serious athlete, if you train seriously, it almost doesn't matter. Like the macronutrient makeup of your diet almost doesn't right. matter, which that in right. itself shows that if it fits your macros is total trash. Because right. basically you could eat any diet you want and you get the exact same results. So even at the most coarse psychological data we have for if it fits your macros, it shows that it's total junk. It's going to work no matter what you eat because you're highly trained. And those are the people who see the huge benefits. They train like a beast. You know, they train every day. And as that filters out into more regular populations, that's where we start seeing the problems, and it just stops. And it's because people aren't taking that into account. Look, this is only going to work for people that anything works for. Awesome. But everybody else, yeah, it's not going to be a really good paradigm.
Ironically, I was doing a talk at the Olympia a couple weeks ago, and I made a comment that my brain has no negative associations with food, meaning that, you know, I don't associate any type of food with making me fat. And, like, I don't believe that if I eat cookies, I'll get fat. I don't believe if I eat ice cream, I get fat. The only thing I associate with my getting fat is inactivity. So, like you said, it literally just goes hand in hand with what you said, is I can literally eat whatever the hell I want as long as I'm training, and I'll look good.
Yeah.
As long as I'm training hard. And this is totally true. Like, for whatever reason, I can walk into Starbucks and I'm go, oh, I want to eat four cookies today. I'll just eat four cookies. Nor in my brain does it go, you shouldn't eat these four cookies because you're going to get fat.
Right.
Nothing in my brain goes off like that. As long as I'm training, you know, and when I'm not training, obviously I just do it anyways and I get fat. But, you know, as long as I'm training, there's no like alarm that goes off in my head that goes, hey, you shouldn't eat these donuts because you're going to get fat. Because I'm able to, like, literally, as long as I'm training once a day, some, you know, twice a day, obviously even better, I can literally eat whatever the hell I want, which is, like, you know, exactly in line with what you just said. So interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy that we actually have the science for that now. And conveniently, the experts in if it fits your macros talk about a lot of science and just ignore that stuff for some reason. I have no idea why they would ignore those studies.
Yeah. I considered doing a 1 week long trial, but I decided not to. I was going to do a trial of, like, just put together my macros from the most remote junk shit food, like cookies and pizzas and burgers and stuff, and then add my protein via whey protein and my fiber via a fiber supplement and see what happened to my body composition, because that's their argument, right? As long as you get your protein, you get your fiber requirements, you're good. So that was my argument. I was going
right.
to put it together, but I was like, I just don't want to do that to myself and my health just to prove a point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other bad side, is like that will have health consequences. So if you're young, you could probably recover from those health consequences. If you only do it for a short period of time, you could recover from those health consequences. But if you try to make that your lifelong goal, you're going to have some serious issues.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about what you can get away with when you're young.
Yep.
So two last questions, man. What's your take on morning fasting versus like a meat and nuts style breakfast? I know you do, you're like a bulletproof coffee kind of guy, or a coffee with cream kind of guy.
Yeah, I like the coffee with cream. I think bulletproof coffee is kind of stupid. I mean, who puts butter in their coffee?
Right.
And if you did just a tiny amount of research, you would find that heavy cream has all kinds of nutraceutical benefits that butter doesn't.
Interesting.
So it's kind of one of those things. Yeah, I think Rob Wolf was actually the first person in an article on his site to recommend butter and coffee, and then it got picked up and branded in a certain way from other people. But, you know, and Rob just made it as an offhand comment, but when you actually do the research, you know, heavy cream, is if you're going to have coffee with something in it, heavy cream, it actually even has cognitive benefits. So, you know, heavy cream is the way to go there. But as far as it all depends on the weight of the athlete. If it's somebody who's trying to gain muscle mass, in that specific scenario, my statement is always don't eat carbs in the morning. Like, I almost don't eat carbs, eat a lot of fat. and keep the protein lower is really the only thing. If you're trying to gain muscle, you need to fuel your body. So it doesn't make sense to skip breakfast every day. But the flip side of that is breakfast in general is the least important meal of the day. So, you know, if you do have to skip a meal or you get rushed, not a big deal.
And how long, I guess, it is, like, let's say, I mean, personally, man, my favorite time to work on, you know, whether I be writing or doing whatever, is first thing in the morning. So how long is the window before it starts becoming detrimental, in your opinion?
You've got to, at least from the science of what we would start to call detrimental, and that's where we actually start to drive either from neutral or anabolic processes towards catabolic processes. You've got about a 12-hour window total. So if you sleep 8 hours at night, you've still got another 4 hours when you wake up that you could hold off eating. You might be able to argue you've got only 11 hours because you need to make sure the nutrients hit hour 12. But that's kind of I'm like you too. I'm most mentally active and sharp first thing in the morning while I'm eating fat. So, you know, I definitely, that was another huge advantage for me with carb backloading when I realized that, I stopped losing. I used to be, you know, eat first thing in the morning, you lose kind of that mental acuity, but not anymore. So basically what I'm saying is, like, I don't care. Try not to go more than 12 hours without food ever.
Yeah, in my off season, I always love waking up and drinking a cup of coffee and working for my first 3 or 4 hours. I get so much done, and then you have to eat, and it's like, you know, you got to cook and you got to prepare it, and it's an hour long process, and to get back in that zone is always like next to impossible. So I love my off seasons for that, as I get to sit at home, sit at my desk, slam a coffee, and, you know, read or write or work for 3 to 4 hours, my favorite time of the day before everybody else gets up.
Yep. Yeah. No distractions at all. That's awesome.
Yeah. So anything else you want people to know about carb backloading, man? This has been amazing. I mean, you're definitely one of the guys I look to as one of my authorities to learn from, and always pioneering new stuff. So first question, anything else you want to know about, or you want or my listeners to know about carb backloading?
I mean, right now, you know, there's carbbackloading.com is a great place to get, you know, the basics. My main website is body.io. A lot of conversation there, podcasts, articles that, you know, kind of help people refine the information for themselves. And then I highly recommend people buy Carb Backloading, because Carb Backloading 2 is coming out soon, and it's not going to be cheap. I mean, I've invested so much into this thing, and there will definitely be a special break for those who hopped on the bandwagon to begin with. And I'm really excited about, you know, all this stuff I've been talking about on your show is not stuff, luckily, I've talked about anywhere yet. So this is just kind of a preview of some of the stuff in Carb Backloading 2. And I'm more than happy to put it out on your show.
Awesome. Thank you, man.
Stuff, so seemed like a good place. Yep.
Thank you so much. That's awesome. And I know the next question is what's on deck for Mr. Kiefer, but. I think you've answered in the podcast. You can Carb Backloading 2, and when's that going to drop? Do you have a scheduled date or approximately?
I'm trying to figure out. I think I'm going to wait until after Christmas. I know maybe I'm kind of toying with the idea of, like, giving people access chapter by chapter as each chapter gets edited and polished. And if I do that, I'll probably do it Christmas. Seems like a good Christmas present for people to buy into that. But otherwise, I'm probably going to wait until, you don't need to buy it. You know, having me on your podcast is more than enough support. I'd be happy. And plus, I'd love your feedback on it, too.
Sweet.
Christmas is the soonest people will get to see anything, but more likely count on, you know, middle end of January.
Amazing, and you're doing a supplement line. I know you kind of dropped that in there subtly, but I'm not going to let it slide, man. What's going on with that?
there's supplements that are really necessary for carb backloading and even carb night, it turns out, that just don't exist in the market. So I had been toying with protein powders and things like that. I'm like, you know, there's some really good protein powders out there. Why don't I try to figure out a supplement that doesn't exist that I can make especially for my audience? And that's what's being launched. It's a post-workout kind of amplifier. I'm not going to say the name yet, but actually probably by a week or two after this podcast goes up, people will be able to try it out. And I'd love to send you some if you want to try it out as well.
Oh, I'd love to, man. That'd be amazing. Yeah, I'm always looking for, you know, smart people like yourself doing unique things, man. Because as we know, the mass market of the supplement industry is extremely watered down and extremely focused on carrying a profit. So you can't always get access to, you know, the top-notch things you're looking for. So for you guys out there listening, if John puts a product out, if Mr. Kiefer puts a product out, I suggest you jump on it because there's research behind it, there's intelligence behind it, and there's integrity behind it. So I will be trying it, and I suggest you guys do as well. Kiefer, man, thank you so much. Dude, I always drop in knowledge bombs, and I hope if I can have you back on again when you drop Carback Living 2 in the new year, that would be amazing. And give us some more amazing insights. So for those of you that don't already own John's Carb Backloading, John Kiefer, carbbackloading.com. I'm going to put a link to there on underneath the podcast, and I'll be dropping you guys an email as well, just letting you know about the podcast. So anything else up and running on any other sites, carbnight.com, body.io. Is that the three?
Yep. Yeah, especially from body.io, you can get everywhere. But,
awesome.
So that's it.
Thank you so much, guys. That's another episode of Muscle Expert, Ben Pakulski, John Kiefer, out.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook /IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter @IFBB Ben PAK. And of course, BenPakulski.com.